your email so that you've got it. We are cruising along. I want your feedback today, just in terms of the caps that we've put on appointments, because we're capped right now at 7 per day per FTE. We've had an increase in referrals from 211 of 121 to date over the course of the past week. Sorry, Yoshi, I'm just seeing your note. And we will put it in the chat if we need to. Certainly very busy. I know some of the regions have been diligently getting some of that data in. I think New Opportunities in particular has really been increasing the number of enrollments that they're adding to HMIS. And I think it looks like anesthesia on the call. It looks like anesthesia, you guys are right where you should be around the total enrollments being somewhat consistent with the Smartsheet data. I would say the same is true for Fairfield County as well, that those numbers, although not precise, they're certainly close. How has it been going for your staff?
Donna and Detrio
joined the meeting.
How's it been going for your staff in terms of doing the double data entry, or what is the feedback from them then? I know it's not ideal.
I guess for my specialist for Fairfield County, I think she appreciates certainly the cap on the appointments to be able to better manage the data piece, because the way that she's seeing it for the 98, it's double that, because for every client you have to contact every landlord. And so being able to manage all those pieces and make sure the case notes are going in and things like that was somewhat of a learning curve, I guess, you know, because a lot of the, for my staff anyway, they're not only new to HBP, but they're new to New Reach. And so just kind of learning all the data entry points and figuring out a way to manage the time so that they can get everything in on time is, like I said, a learning curve, but it's working.
And in my suspicion, but please tell me if I'm incorrectly making any assumptions, is that some of this is about a learning curve, right? And that, you know, not only have your staff been really focusing on what's allowable in the program, what's the program model, but then there's all the other technical aspects with it. And I think it sounds as if staff are becoming more accustomed with how the model should be working or who they should be reaching out to in general. I know there's the occasional questions that arise with like unexpected circumstances. But it seems like people are feeling more confident in that aspect. And now it's helping kind of that technology piece catch up. Okay.
Okay,
Sylvia. All right. So, and then also just highlighting kind of where we are now that we've capped appointments. Again, one of the things that we had talked about last time I think this group met, and I know a couple of regents have done this already, is taking a day if you need it to play a little bit of catch up. So, particularly, some regions are obviously higher in terms of the call volume that they're managing right now. I think it's really Greater Hartford, New Haven, and Fairfield County, you know, floating between a daily average of appointments of between 3 up to 7. That's over the course of the past 4 weeks. Same is true of Northwest, and then a little bit slightly lower volume in Central Eastern and the MMW region. But at this point, I think other than Hartford, there's been, and there was an oddity in terms of Monday of this week, Bobby Joe, where you guys had 8 appointments scheduled. You know, it doesn't look like we are consistently reaching the caps that are in place so far. And again, I think we have to toy around with that cap of 7. Is that the right number? Are your staff able to keep up with it? Do you need to take a break and have a catch-up day? Like, what are you guys seeing?
Well, I know in Eastern, we're catching up with what we've got so far, just in terms of the record keeping and the paperwork. So, we've put some additional emphasis on the paperwork piece of this whole thing. And I think that just to be, perfectly honest, I think the series of changes in the program also caused, some delays in terms of the paperwork catching up with, the actual appointments, which it obviously hasn't yet in Eastern, but we are working on it and we're focusing on it. But I think that the program changes have also caused, just like you say, some coming up to speed and adjusting, because when the program changes, you have to go back and think about the folks that you've already spoken to, and would that program change affect them, et cetera. So there's been some fits and starts, I guess, Lee, is what I'm saying.
Sure. And I think that's very fair. Particularly with calculations and how we've changed that. I know that was a major change for people as well, with the calculation worksheet. I can certainly appreciate that too. And I think, the other thing with this program and the volume is that I think we don't have the luxury of perhaps like diving in more deeply with people when they come in, which I think is often what our staff are accustomed to doing, right? Like, they're here to be problem solvers. They're here to connect them, that household, to a myriad of different local resources. And I think what we're seeing is we just don't have the time or capacity to do that. And I think that's also an adjustment for people as well, right? It's like kind of getting into that groove of how much they should be, how much time they should be dedicating to any one particular call. Certainly I know with some of the tenants that we work with, soliciting that information can take time, and then you have to reach out to the landlord as well. So it's kind of that double contact for people. All right. And then just in terms of case,
is there also a percentage of no-shows similar to which CAN appointments have, or have you guys been seeing that 7 appointments are scheduled, 7 appointments for the most part are being made?
I think I've not looked that closely at the data. Okay. And I think right now, I've got to send out another round today is some of that cleanup about the 2-on-1 appointments, because many of them are still being shown as like a referred status. Mm-hmm. So some of it, I can't really get you a good number right now.
I think that, and again, I'm not doing it right, but just speaking on through the experience of the CAN, I think that's going to dictate the caseloads and what feels manageable, right? Because if there is still that, even if it's smaller, like 25% no show, then I'm assuming those numbers are pretty reasonable, right? If everyone is showing, and then sometimes there's even more because of all the follow-up and whatever else, then I think that would be where we might want to explore the changing of the number of appointments.
And Jess, that's why I asked to drop it down to 7 per FTE, because in talking to our providers, the no-show rate was really low.
Okay.
So you've got 7 appointments showing up per day. That's like your whole day right there. So Yeah, I think obviously the data is not up to date because there's issues with that, but they were reporting, you know, very few no-shows.
Okay. That's what I was thinking too, because also it's a different population, right? So it's not the ones that are unsheltered, hard to engage, all of that. These are legitimate people that are in their units and are desperate to keep their units kind of thing. So I'm imagining, and I'm sure Allison and Anastasia can speak more to this, but I'm sure they're not seeing too much no-shows. And so I guess seven seems reasonable compared to what I see with regards to the can. But again, I have no idea the volume of follow-up that's required that can't be achieved in that initial conversation, right? That then is gonna magnify how much work is actually being done per household.
Well, and I think that's some of it too, is that, you know, it's not just like a one and done appointment where it is with the can, right? Or you guys at the can level will you know, hand it off to someone else to do some longer term follow-up, where I think it's all of your housing specialist staff that are then responsible for carrying the follow-up administrative work for that person until we can transition them over as appropriate.
And Lee, for the referrals, at what point is someone being marked as a no-show? Because I know that we had said that the providers, you know, can take up to a full week before we would schedule them for a second appointment. So does that mean that there's a week time frame before someone would be closed out?
So I told my providers. Go ahead, Amanda.
I told my, well, because you guys set that 7-day rule, I said you try three times, and if you haven't heard back in 7 days, then close them out.
Yeah. Okay. And yeah, just looking in the chat, Dave said it's less than 10%. And then Allison just said that her percentage is like 3% no show. So yeah. So I think maybe just, and I'm sure you're doing this, Lee, but like evaluating this ongoing, because I think that's as we learn more about the follow-up and the requirements per household, I think caseloads cannot be like replicated based off of can appointments. I think they have to be very different.
Well, and these are actually more, 7 appointments per day is more than what our can people do. I don't know about you, Jess.
Oh, really?
We cap it at 25 per week per person.
Oh, you know what? You're right. We only do, I'd have to look back. I think the most anyone does is like 5 a day, but that's in a very large window. That's true.
The other thing, just while we're talking about the referral data, is that I don't know if everyone remembers, but sometime in like January or February, there was that glitch where when we were doing our intakes for the eviction prevention program, the referrals weren't saving. So Nutmeg is still working on that. James promised me that by today or this weekend, all of them should be uploaded. But I think it was like, I don't know, somewhere around like 100 referrals statewide that weren't in there. So you'll start to see, and that's again, statewide, so not for every can. So don't be surprised if you see all of a sudden a whole bunch of like unprocessed referrals because that data is supposed to be uploaded by Nutmeg, hopefully this weekend.
But Laura, those are saying, also people that along the way they got rescheduled, correct?
Potentially, yes. But they're still going to show up as open referrals once James adds that data.
So it was just making sure that the referral status wasn't blank and it said referred. Is that what you're saying?
No, like there actually isn't a referral. So like if you go back to like December 1 to present, and you look at all the past reservations, there's a good amount. Maybe it's not 100, maybe it's closer to 75, but there's a significant amount that didn't have any referrals at all. So if you look at the referral column, it's just blank.
Right, but they showed up on our list and our folks would have called them regardless of whether it said referred or not, right?
Correct, but there wouldn't be that data entry element.
Got it. Thanks.
When those do show up, obviously the HMIS Excel export would show that. Do we just process them with the back date that would have been processed? Like if it was a referral from February 2nd and we just weren't able to open or close it out, would we just backdate that referral and the outcome to that February 2nd date?
Yes, I believe I gave James the date, so the referral should already be backdated. So hopefully you don't have to do anything with that, and it's just a matter of processing.
And these would have been referrals. So, you know, when I send out those spreadsheets to say, these are all the blank or people who are in referred status, like what the update on them, they should have already populated those lists. So it should not be new names because I'm pulling that spreadsheet directly from the Excel export from the scheduler.
You're sending them the ones that are blank too? Because I just looked at it. There's 88 that don't have any referrals. And then there's a whole bunch that are in the referred status. Okay.
Yeah, it's probably been about a month, I think, since I sent out that list for cleanup. But you'll also be getting it again later on today.
Well, and I think the issue has been like, not everybody, and I think this is new, is that you have to close out both the 211 appointment and your CAN appointment in order for the data to be reflected on that list. So I don't think that has been a known fact for everybody.
I mean, I think we've got to look into that more because I know that the 211 appointments will close out automatically.
With the proper referral status, though, no, you have to go in and close it out. If they're a no-show, that's fine. But if they're accepted into program, you have to close out both, is my understanding. I don't know.
Yeah, it auto-closes to no-show. After, I don't know if I forget what the time frame is, but it's like a month or something. It automatically closes to no show.
So if they're accepting someone into the program, they have to close out both the CAN appointment and the 211 appointment for it to be reflected on the schedule status.
All right. Well, so there are also some other planned upcoming changes to HMIS and the data enrollment. Aside from this conversation about closing out appointments. I'm going to follow up with Nutmeg today about the status of those changes. Because again, I think we talked about last time we were together, basically everything would be on the DOH ESG enrollment if we're able to do it. So that your staff don't need to toggle between the two roles and they wouldn't need to close out CAN appointments in the way that they have been, right? So a lot of lessened data entry. So I'd rather get those changes done and implemented so that it's simplified for your staff as opposed to adding in this extra interim step. So more to come on that. Anything else on the referrals to 211?
These referrals are in the HBIS system, correct? And yeah. Not on the smart sheet. Okay. Because I know I've referred 16 individuals in-house. How would that reflect in the HBIS system through HRA?
Anyone who's enrolled in the program needs to be in HMIS. That's where we're getting all of the communications from 211 on the schedule. Anyone who is enrolled in the project, we also want to capture on the smart sheet because there's additional data elements as it relates to eviction prevention. That's not currently captured in HMIS. And the smart sheet also allows us to communicate, right? So it's our ability to refer directly to mediation. It's our ability to refer, for HRA, it would be any in-house referrals that you're doing from when Saray is referring to Joyce or Rose.
Yeah, because the individuals that I'm doing in-house, they don't have income. So I know that they don't qualify for HPP, correct? Because of that and no income going forward.
So they would still be eligible for HPP. Okay. We don't want to exclude someone. Our ability to help them might be a little bit more limited, but I think the work then is.
Sorry, like a like a security deposit, yes. But okay. I'm sorry, I'm just going through my brain right now.
You can talk after, Sari, if you want.
Okay.
All right. So this is a good segue into case management referrals. So again, this is all via the data that's currently on the Smartsheet. We do need to have, not today, but at later points in time, conversation around really trying to prioritize those case management referrals. At this point, Northwest is really the only one who is probably at and above its capacity to be able to take referrals on. But as of right now, Adam, only 10 of the 46 who've been referred are being identified as accepted. And so much of the conversation that we had last week, of course, was, you know, not solely using case management services if someone just needs like housing location help, or because frankly, I think our case managers are going to turn into real estate agents if that's all they're doing. And I think, you know, what we do need to assess along the way is someone's ability to locate their own unit. And many of the people that are going to be coming into this project are probably going to be able to locate their own unit because they've done it before, right? They've been living on their own, they're in their own apartment. I know some CANs have started to leverage their housing location staff that they have doing CAN work. So like Journey Home, MHC in the Northwest region, you know, those staff, because that's what they're doing, right? They're connecting to landlords all of the time. They might be the best people to connect with locally to do some of that housing search work.
That's kind of what actually me and Augustine from MHC, we had a meeting yesterday, and we definitely came up with a game plan that they're going to help us with the apartment searches. But again, as he stated, they're far and few out there, apartments. And you also made a statement that Waterbury, for some strange reason, have increased some apartments that were $700 to $800 are now $1,200. You know, one bedroom or a room from maybe $400 to $500 is now $700 to $800. So they're starting to see some of that. But the good thing is that we made that connection with trying to collaborate between the both of us. So, you know, my case manager, because to be honest with you, a lot of that 10 is looking for apartments. The good thing that I've been telling, you know, the clients is I want you guys to, you know, when you guys see something, because it takes two, it's not just going to fall just solely on us. We want you to be part of this participation as well, to look for and secure an apartment for yourself, because you guys know how to do it. And, you know, that's been kind of receptive, you know, and I don't want people to, you know, okay, I pick something to where I want you to live, you know, per se. So they've been receptive to that. It's just right now, at least in the Waterbury area where most of my referrals are at, apartments are somewhat scarce. But I believe hopefully when the moratorium ends, we're going to see a huge influx of apartments up for rent. But we just got to probably wait till that time.
Yeah, thanks for that, Adam. And I think the other thing that Casey had raised was really talking about, or maybe it was Allison, one of you had said to me, like, bring in kind of the discussions around shared housing for people as well, right? Particularly as it relates to affordability. So that's one of the topics that will open up to housing specialists and case managers next week or the following meeting. Because of, you know, for many people coming in, as you guys see, likelihood of increasing income significantly to be able to afford a market rate apartment, particularly as prices have gone up, is just difficult for people. So, you know, introducing that from your staff as well.
Lee, I just have a question.
In
looking at this, right, my initial thought is, holy cow, Northwest is like more than double the referrals. Can I just hear from the other cans on who's getting referred to case management? What are you guys seeing that refers you to the services? Because I'm just wondering, and not saying that we're doing anything wrong in Northwest, right? But just wondering if maybe we're over referring if we are seeing such a huge number compared to everywhere else, especially like Hartford that has what, double the appointments. I don't know if anybody has thoughts. I think we're just looking to see like what's appropriate referrals.
Off the top of my head, I was going to say from the Hartford perspective, like if you look at the amount of money we've put out in Greater Hartford, like maybe those cases aren't as challenging because we've been able to actually pay out and resolve situations. So we probably didn't need to refer those to case management. We'd have just referred to mediation. Whereas I know in Central, like Saree hasn't been able to process any payments because the cases are so challenging and they don't have any income. And so she's actually referring more to case management. And I know some of the numbers might be off just because of data entry, you know, in Smartsheet. So like she was just saying, she actually has 16 that she referred to case management. So I think it's a matter of like how challenging the case is, whether they have income or not. And we've just lucked out that we've been able to get some clients with income in Greater Hartford and been able to resolve their situation.
Okay, that's helpful.
So I would say in addition to that, if the, if the case manager is the same person that's doing the intakes, like it is for Eastern, then obviously that's another factor that might increase the number of referrals. They're referring them to themselves.
And not just that. I agree with you, Betty, but I also think that extends to if it's all within the same organization.
Sure. Well. Yep. I would agree.
Yeah. Where I think kind of the use of the Smartsheet is probably most important in areas like New Haven and Fairfield County. I'm probably forgetting Northwest. I might be forgetting one other, apologies, but yeah, we're two separate agencies.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say, you know, well over half of ours are our housing search, but particularly in Fairfield County, it makes so much sense because, you know, even the case manager, we did get a new case manager. I'll make that announcement as well. But even when he started, he was like, how is anyone going to afford an apartment? Like, right, that's what we're doing. Like, it's just the housing prices are so insane in Fairfield County that is one of the biggest things that people need assistance with. So I want to say maybe like 11 of our 18 referrals are housing search.
Okay. And I do know that was, I think, one of the primary reasons for the referrals to Primetime, right? So I'm not saying, and Anastasia, you can speak up. I'm not saying anything was wrong, right? I just was wondering where, how.
So question, this is Anastasia. So I'm wondering, like, if someone has enough income and we're submitting the FSR, the housing coordinators, those particular individuals, we wouldn't refer to case management? Because I'm under the impression that we're referring everyone.
So you don't have to refer everyone. So you can, you know, if someone has enough income, they're able to look for an apartment on their own, you know, you're not identifying any other initial needs for that household, I wouldn't refer to case management.
Okay, because we've been pushing case management on everyone because, and a lot of them are agreeing to the case management. So even if they can afford the rent moving forward and we're assisting financially, they're still opting to, you know, get case management. But if that's, you know, if we shouldn't push that, then we can, you know, change moving forward.
And I think that might be.
And I think.
Oh, go ahead, Lee.
Go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, I think that quite a few that I've been in contact with do have an income, but there's a few that have an income that definitely need case management. I know at least about five that they're not going to survive without case management. I mean, I got one lady that's literally paralyzed. You know, she's has a you know, disability. She gets an income, but there's no way. Like, I have to refer her. She wants mental health services. You know, there's a lot of things that's going on. But I think, Anastasia, we could definitely talk about that when we have our meetings and kind of sift
come up with through.
System, yeah. Yeah, come up through, you know, with a plan of seeing which ones you could need the case management, which ones, you know, really don't. And I think that would probably help us kind of identify those who are the more needy and the more suitable for case management.
I think the other thing, you know, and Anastasia, I know we talked about this in one of our local meetings, and I don't know if others are thinking of this down the road, but for the ones that you're referring to that are open to services, right, but maybe not the most in need based off of the volume of what you're seeing, could we not, you guys, make an internal referral, or we refer out to our CAP agency that have services that might be able to address that? So then everybody's getting offered. So you can still have the mindset of, because it is important. They're in a housing crisis for some reason, right? Mm-hmm. Let's work on it. But maybe Adam and our HPP partners get the more significant, right? Because that's kind of the point of this program per se. And those that can afford units and things like that, shorter term of services, we can connect with our local agencies. I don't know.
No, well, that makes sense because obviously New Opportunities is the CAP agency. So right. It would be
for you guys,
easy
yeah.
for us to refer internal. So yeah. That's a great idea. Yeah, we can do that. That's not an issue.
And I think some of this is an art, right? And like looking at who is being referred, trying to ascertain, like Jessica said, like who's the most acute, who needs the services. Because you're not going to have capacity to serve everybody, you know, particularly like Adam, I'm just going to use you as the example because you're getting the most referrals right now, but you know, you're going to come a point in time where you're at your cap of 30. I mean, even that's high, right? I mean, typically if we're doing intensive case management, like 1 to 8, 1 to 10, somewhere around there. Right. So I mean, 1 to 30 is high and realistically what you can offer for some of these households, so I think it's really going to be looking at like who's the most in need and like who can be referred out more quickly to other local services. All right. So
Lee, I had a quick question on this. So yeah. This data is coming from the smart sheets, right? Because I know we have 16 yeah. accepted and 2 referred. So when we accept it in Smartsheets, is that when the 6-month window for case management starts? Because one of those people, she's staying where she is, she's working with the housing coordinator. And so I know that she's already connected. I've kind of been dragging my feet on reaching out to her because my understanding is once we reach out to her, that 6 months starts. And I want her to have the support for as long as she can after she's kind of stabilized with housing coordination. Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Yeah, it does. So when we put it in the guidelines, we use the start date of enrollment into the program. So it would,
okay.
So technically it's the date that, you know, we capped it at 6 months, but again, it can be extended if necessary. You know, 6 months we thought was like a reasonable time frame and to serve more as a guide. So like this particular woman, you know, if for some reason you needed to extend her beyond that time, you know, we can do that. There's nothing, that's our local decision. There's nothing that, like from a funding source is setting that.
Okay. Standard. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So related to case management referrals are also our mediation referrals. And I think one of the things that we're looking to get some feedback from all of you on today is that in some of the regions, there's been no referrals to mediation, which I think is surprising to us.
In other areas, like in Greater Hartford, there's been a great amount of referrals to mediation. So again, like wanting to have the conversation about what you guys are seeing, what are there barriers that your staff is experiencing in terms of getting the referrals to mediation? Is more work needed to provide TA to your staff about what mediation entails? Like,
so for good morning, everyone. I know I'm a bit late, but I'm
on Lorraine.
That's why I'm not on camera. As far as the mediation services, Greater Hartford Region could have actually submitted or referred more to mediation. But a lot of the times, what we found out is when, by the time the client slash tenants come to us, they have already negotiated with the landlord. And I want to say 80% of the time, the landlord's attorney is involved. So cases like that, we would not refer to mediation. So although our mediation numbers seem high, it could have been almost double.
When you have those cases coming in, is the tenant represented by an attorney as well?
Legal aid, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in some areas, so like I've seen it quite a bit, so like not only Greater Hartford, but also in Greater New Haven, that quite a few people are coming in and they're already represented by a legal aid attorney.
Yes.
Or typically it's legal aid that's referring the client to HPP at this point. And my guess is, you know, that's because really it's people who are have serious non-payment of 6 months or longer that can be evicted at this point. So that, I mean, that's my sense, right? Like there's a sense of urgency and acuity within our court system right now for those serious non-payment issues. But as once the moratorium ends, that we'll start to see more people perhaps coming in like with just that notice to quit. And Amanda, so Amanda had just put in the chat some additions to the smart sheet around legal status. I believe it's already in there, Amanda, where it'll say like representation by, yeah, I forget the exact wording. Jessica, I just saw you on mute.
Yeah, sorry. Do you, and I don't know if you have more on mediation, but do you have any updates on any, like collaborations, like are we going to be using CLS in a formal way? And the reason I ask is they reached out to myself and actually joined our Western Connecticut monthly meeting yesterday, which was very helpful. And we met the woman out of the Waterbury office. And just, you know, they kind of made it clear, like, you can send people, we're not able to prioritize anybody, like, kind of thing. But it was left kind of in limbo on, like, maybe that's changing in the future. And I didn't know if you knew anything about that. Or maybe not.
Yeah, so our partnership with legal has been more formally rolled out around Unite CT.
Okay.
So not anything specifically dedicated to HPP. That was the original intent, but there was new funding coming that we didn't know about. So, but I think for our purposes, you know, if you are finding someone or your staff finding someone that needs legal services, it would still be statewide.
Okay. And just building the relationships that we're starting to do on our like local level as much as mm-hmm. we need to. Okay, cool. All right, thank you.
Yeah. Yep. So what about for the areas? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, Lee, that's me. So the areas that have no referrals, if I can read your mind. Here's a request that I would have. And unlike probably many or most others, I don't have access into HMIS. So what I would ask is if you could send these reports out a day in advance of this meeting so that I can actually go and ask some questions and do some investigation and find out some more in terms of what are really the circumstances here. So, because if I had to give you an answer today, it would be a total guess as to why there are no referrals to mediation for Eastern. I could make a guess, but that is all it would be. So is it possible Sure. that you can send these out in advance so that, you know, we can have a richer discussion about it on the day when we do meet?
I will absolutely do my best.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And I know that it's tough.
I can't say that I'm always going to make good on that promise, but
that's all right, Lee. That's all right. Because I don't know if I've got an issue, until I get these reports and then. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, this is Donna in Meriden, Wallingford, and Middletown. And we have documents going out to landlords. And in talking to Francis, you know, a few of them are a little overwhelmed right now with the kind of commitment and going to mediation, but she's working it. So we might have some referrals to go to mediation. I think it's trying to engage the landlords in such a way that this is a win-win for both of them when they themselves may be thinking, I need all my rent money.
Are you seeing situations, Donna, where if the landlord just thought they were going to get a check sent to them, that it would be more enticing, but now we're asking the landlord to take an extra step and actually participate in a process and engage with their tenant?
Yes, I think that's part of it. It's those extra steps. When will I know? It's how fast can this process be moved? And when will I know what I'm going to get? Because I may opt out still and finish the eviction process.
Yeah.
And now we have the competition of the right. Now we have the competition of the new program where the landlord can apply directly. So we're trying to see if that's going to have an impact.
Mm-hmm. So Berta, I am wondering, like, what's been your experience with the landlords when you have mediated cases? Are they typically, like, is it some arm twisting to get them to come to the table, or have they been pretty open to the process?
They've been pretty open. It's not a lot of arm twisting. Like, I have a couple of cases that I have to go back to the landlords, and where I'm going to be working with Casey because we probably are going to need a relocation plan for this tenant, but it will at least buy the tenant's time. Bobby Joe, Casey, and Jessica have really, really been involved with their cases. We had a mediation at the beginning of the week, and Casey was part of that mediation because it was to buy her time and then a relocation plan. So it's clear that as of May 1st, she needs to be out of the unit. But what I am finding is that there have been a lot of cases that have been referred to mediation, and they sit there for so long because the paperwork is not there. And I don't reach out to the tenant and the landlord unless all of the required documents are there. And then when I have called to say, okay, I'm just calling to check on this case, they're like, oh, well, that's been settled. And I'm like, okay, well, when was I going to be told that? So immediately when a case is referred, even if the paperwork is not all there, we immediately start prepping the case for mediation because we want to make sure when all the paperwork gets there, we can move on the case immediately because, as Donna was saying, like, all this time has already lapsed. So then when it comes to me, they have to wait again, for me to move on the case. But I'm asking people not to refer any case or upload it unless all the paperwork is involved, because it just kind of slows everything down. But to find out that we've been working on a case and going back and forth, and then when I call and they say, oh no, that's been settled, like, that really concerns me because we've been working on a case and waiting. And then I think that people are finding it easier just to do this themselves.
When you say just to do it themselves, do the agreement themselves.
To make an agreement with the landlord and just get it out of the way. And then that the voluntary repayment agreement, I'm wondering, I'm not sure if that's on the agenda for today, but I saw one of the voluntary repayment agreements, and I'm wondering when I called a landlord's attorney and I explained who I was and, you know, what was the purpose of the call. He said, well, where did you come from? He said, I thought this was resolved already. So if I were a landlord and or an attorney, and if I signed the voluntary repayment agreement that is being used, I would think it was resolved already. So when I call, they have no idea why I should be calling them.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a second. So, I think in particular, but before Quinnipiac was ready to take referrals, I know that some of the staff had completed the voluntary agreements, right, to be able to get the money out. I think at this point in time, no one other than Virta should be completing that voluntary agreement because we do want people to go to mediation. I think Quinnipiac brings that skill set to be able to mediate the cases. I think they have carefully crafted language with the intent of protecting both parties. I don't want any of our provider agencies other than Quinnipiac to be doing the voluntary agreements at this point in time. Once Quinnipiac does mediate a case, they do an agreement, Virta will send it back to the housing specialist so that we know like what to request from.
And we don't even use the voluntary repayment agreement that is used by the program. We have a different one. And what we do is we tailor the agreement to meet the needs of the party. So we can always add and change the agreement. We had a mediation yesterday and it may be minor, but it caused problems between the landlord and the tenant, that if the landlord reaches out to the tenant before the 10th of the month, early in the morning, the tenant is really aggravated. So we even incorporated that into the agreement. And it may seem really small to other people, but it's their agreement and this is what's going to work for them.
It's awesome that you included that, right? Like it's so client-centered and it's awesome. Like mm-hmm. From a kind of provider standpoint, that's great. So any questions that you guys have about voluntary agreements, any barriers that you're foreseeing or unintended consequences of only having Quinnipiac do
fiscal?
This is Casey. I don't necessarily have barriers per se. I've been surprised at how many times things are going backwards from case management, like back to mediation. And I don't know if it's a matter of like once the landlords get into.
Oh, Maria, can you? Sorry, Casey. If you're not muted, can you mute? I'm just hearing some background. Thanks.
That's okay. I'm just surprised how many times someone comes in and they think they're going to relocate. And then I don't know if it's a matter of the landlords getting into the eviction process and realizing that it's a hassle, or if it's just Jessica Oki doing a great job explaining what the program is and then they're more open to it. But we've definitely had a few who thought they were going to move and then thought they were going to stay. And then it's kind of going back to mediation. You know, they're saying, well, can we do this instead? So it's definitely more back and forth than for some reason was thinking it was going to be. I was thinking it was going to be like they're going to go to mediation and they're going to stay, or they're going to move and they're coming to case management and we kind of go down those paths. But it's definitely more kind of back and forth, which like I said is not a barrier. It was just kind of surprised. But part of it is I guess, and maybe I just need to look at it more, because my understanding from last week was once they're involved in judicial mediation, like it can't necessarily go back to Quinnipiac. But I think that it can now. So I think for myself, I just need to get a little more clarity around like that process, if it's going back to mediation or you know, when it can and cannot. So we had one the other day that the landlord didn't even want to, said he was willing to engage with HPP, but not until after the judicial mediation. And so
Bert and I talked about that, and we've been emailing about that case. So it's just, I think there's like nuances to every case that every time, and I don't want to send an email every time and say, what about this? What about this? So like I said, it's not necessarily a barrier. It is just a little bit surprising to me, I guess, the back and forth.
Berta, do you want to comment? Oh, Berta, you're muted.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're currently working with the judicial mediators and a judge right now to figure out how we can best work together. Because when I hear it being said that landlords say they don't want to engage with the tenant, I understand that. But when they go to court, they're still going to engage. And what mediation is trying to say is this could be a win-win situation. If you take this person to court, more than likely, you're not going to end up with anything. At least if we sit down and mediate, there is something on the table. So we're working with judicial right now to figure out how we carefully craft the language so that people are still willing. Because what landlords are concerned about is if they go into a mediated agreement that they may not be able to pursue an eviction. They still can pursue an eviction. And what we're trying to do is incorporate our agreement into possibly a stipulation and or a judgment. So we are working on that. So I understand what you're saying, Casey. It is concerning.
Yes. And I also just want to give a shout out to Berta because she has been so responsive. I think we've been on the phone every day this week. So Berta has been fabulous to work with. So I just want to give that shout out to her.
Thank you, Casey.
And I think, Casey, too, like what you touch upon is like these cases are complex, right? And there's so many variables, right, about what the landlord's willing to do or not do, you know, like we've been talking about all along. So I think, I appreciate greatly the consult with Berta and her team around some of this stuff because it's not always clear. All right. Any other questions or comments about that? The only other thing that I really wanted to touch upon this week as well, we had talked last time we met about the FSR process, and I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page about that. So we had talked that if we are requesting future rent for someone. So we're going to say maybe pay 2 months of rent going forward or 3 months of rent going forward for someone. ACT is not able to pay those rents up front. So what needs to happen is that your agency needs to put in an FSR each month for those particular individuals. So for example, anyone that we are paying April rent on, you would have to submit those FSRs by the 20th of the month prior so that ACT can get those payments out. How you choose to coordinate that internally, that is up to you. You know, if there's one designated point person that's going to submit those tickets on a monthly basis and FSRs, that's up to you guys. You can in the system, you know, pre-enter the financial service request in HMIS, but it's really the ticket that will trigger ACT to go in to make those payments on a monthly basis. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So related to that, I sent out to supervisors and our contractors the expenditure report. So I sent that out right before this meeting, but wanted to share it here because I know people aren't necessarily accustomed to taking a look at these. But ACT puts this together weekly, and it will show you how much of your allocated rental assistance has been sent out and what your balance is. ACT is also kind enough to add in any client level detail as well. So this, because there's, you know, certainly plenty of funding available currently, but as we move throughout the course of the project, something to be mindful about and something to be planful about any projected expenditures, right? Because we can't overextend. As we go through the year, if there is an area that is underspending, we have traditionally moved some of the financial assistance line items between regions, just to make sure that we're spending down the funds that are available. So, you know, again, if there is an underspent region, we could move that to an area that needs the money or is spending it down more quickly. So I share this one to highlight it. It's broken out by region, but most importantly, if you had a question, you would be able to look at the client level data. And so ACT will give us a breakdown by month, by can. You can sort and filter this to see the specific clients and how much has been paid out for them. And these are the checks that have been cut in any particular month, so you know what goes out. I get these weekly from ACT, and as I get them, I will send them along to all of you. Any questions about this? I know right now we have had the most spending in Greater Hereford, you know, at about the 115,000 and change. Dave is also putting together dashboards for us so that we can look at spending patterns, we can look at average amounts that we're spending per household, all of those kind of higher level data points that we can see over time. I think right now, in terms of the mock-up that I saw, we're on average spending about $4,000 per household. Dave, am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, let me just check.
$5,299.
Yeah, about 5,000. Yeah.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you.
Doing some fancy work in Excel, right? So,
fancy.
All right. So, anyhow, any questions on that? Okay. So we are right at 10 o'clock. I want to thank you guys for the really good conversation today. I think we will not meet again in our group for about a month because Good Friday would be our first Friday of the month conversation. So obviously, if there's anything, please feel free to reach out. And I will talk to you all in about a month or so. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.